Paul McShane, welcome to the podcast, my friend. Look, you are the perfect rugby league story. When I've done some reading into you, you know, the kid who reinvented himself, showed unbelievable resilience to pick yourself up off the floor after you'd been tossed aside, pied by your boyhood club, and then, you know, proving all the doubters wrong to win the ultimate prize and being crowned the Man of Steel. So I want to go right back at the beginning, Paul. I think I'm right in saying you were high school captain of your team. You joined the Leeds Academy in 2006. You were named the Junior Academy Player of the Year in 07. So I'm just painting this picture of this kid where it was all going so right for. You know, you were called up to the England Under 18 Academy. You made your Leeds debut in 2009. At that stage, it couldn't have gone any worse, could it? It couldn't have been any better at that stage. It was the perfect start for you, Paul.
Yeah, mate, it was. But as a kid, like, it's all I wanted to do, to play for Leeds, being a Leeds lad and stuff like that. But I probably got I didn't realise how much I had to sacrifice as a young lad to be a professional rugby player and stuff like that. And I learned some tough lessons when I got released, but it were all for the right reasons.
Did you rest on your laurels a little bit with the talent you had at a young age, do you think?
I think so. I thought that talent would get you all the way, where there's a lot more to it than just being able to play a bit of rugby. There's your fitness and stuff like that, your diet, the sacrifices that you have to make, which I didn't quite realise until I nearly lost it. I think when I was at Wakefield, I was thinking, I might have to go part-time, find a job. And that's when I realised that I had to really knuckle down.
I mean, look, playing for your boyhood club, the team that you supported, Paul, what was it like then being part of that winning machine and seeing everyone go out on the pitch and playing when you weren't really featuring at all? How difficult was that for you?
At first it were easy because the players that were there and stuff like that, I was still learning my trade. I got to play under some great hookers and some great players, but it got to a stage where I had a fair taste. I think it was the year before I went on loan to Widnes. I played a fair few games that season, and for some reason I could never get involved in the big games, the playoff games. And then that's when I started thinking that I just needed to get out there and play regular rugby.
Mm. And look, because everyone knows your story now, obviously having won the Man of Steel, but you went on loan to Hull, didn't you? You were at Widnes, you were at Hunslet. When did you realise, I know you were released in 2013, but when did you realise at Leeds that you genuinely didn't have a future there and you were going to have to look elsewhere?
Probably the year that I left, really. I think Brian Mack were pretty honest with me at the end of that year. The club had just signed Paul Leighton. For me, I'd have stuck around forever. Like, all I wanted to do was play for Leeds, and I didn't really ever think that I'd leave. As a young kid, you set your heart on being at that club all your life and stuff like that, and then stuff happens, and Mack were really honest with me. At the end of that season, he says, right, you can stay, but you're probably not going to play, but I'd advise that you go and just find your own way in rugby, and that's what I did. That's what I had to do.
I was just going to say, that can be quite tough. I remember when I was at Saints with John for 4 years, and my last season there in 2015, I played regularly. I was playing pretty well, and I had a similar conversation towards the end of the season. I had an inkling that I wasn't going to be kept, but probably similar to you at Leeds, I just wanted to play for St Helens, and that's all I ever wanted. I probably would have taken less money or other things just to stay there and be part of the squad. But when you're pretty much told that you're not wanted, it's quite a tough thing to take. And I actually considered hanging up the boots at the time, because I thought, if I'm not competing for silverware every season and playing with the best players in the competition, it's not really worth it. And, you know, I think when you move away, it can kind of give you a kick up the arse, and you can kind of see that it's not all about playing for the big couple of teams, and there is, you know, great rugby out there. I just wondered, like, after you left Leeds, what was your mindset like? Was it a case of you wanting to prove people wrong, or was it, were you fine with that and you just moving on to the next stage in your career?
At the time, I don't think it fully sunk in. I think it took me a good 18 months to 2 years to realise that I'd been moved on, and that I have to give it a real good crack. Because I think at Wakefield, I just didn't find any form at all at Wakefield, and I don't know if that was still that I was gutted that I had to leave Leeds.
John, you wonder how many sort of gems of players have never reached their full potential because they never had it nurtured. I mean, I don't know how much is down to the player, how much is down to the coaching system.
Paul's just described exactly how it should work because he has stifled opportunities at Leeds. So then we need to provide other routes for people to just develop the skill set and become competent enough to then become a senior player. Like, the best thing that Paul could have done was to leave and to go apply his trade, build up hours in the bank of... Now, we talk about Paul McShane as this instinctive player who's got a high rugby IQ. Like, although that was always maybe part of his game, the real detailed high rugby IQ that you see now has come through a journey of thousands of hours of practice, of thousands of games, of playing long minutes in games. And ultimately, if you're behind somebody at a big club, you have to leave. You have to leave if you want to be any good. So what I say to people who are in Paul's situation is back yourself and leave. And I'm not necessarily saying that's how it feels at the time. It's tough to pallet, you know, when, you know, your family and friends are hugely involved and are proud that you've probably had a successful career up to that point. But the right call and the only call is to go and play rugby because you do not get better at anything by watching other people do it. You need to go and play it. And in some ways, I think for every young kid who's stifled, you know, they need to look at somebody like a Paul McShane and say, well, look, there's route A, or there's route B, there's route C, and not let these bumps in the road, these hurdles that we all get thrown, put you off. And it's credit to Paul that, you know, it maybe took 5-6 years for things to click, but he had the fucking toughness to keep going. Like, there's, for every one guy like him who keeps going and now is on the verge of playing for England, winning Man of Steels, there's 10 lads who give it away. And we need to tell the message of people like Paul who've done it hard way, but the right way, you know, and that's sport.
Yeah, that is sport, and that's life as well. One of my biggest pet hates is when you go for a pint, and that's, you know, it's whether it's in Castleford, Leeds, Oldham, or wherever, and you're talking rugby with someone, and they tell you about their journey in the game and how they were on the books at Leeds or a big club, and how it was either an injury or it was, oh, this coach didn't like me, or some kind of excuse, and that's the reason why they didn't make it. Now, as we've heard from Paul, if you've got it in you, you find a way. And that's just a lesson that you have to learn from a young age, that you're resilient, you persevere, and you find a way through dropping down, playing for a lesser club, or moving position, or there's loads of ways and loads of different journeys out there. But I think it's that perseverance and that finding a way no matter what. And you know, we've seen him come through at Leeds and probably drop down a level at Wakey, playing different position, play different style of rugby, maybe concentrating on more different sides of the game that it wasn't as comfortable with at a younger age. Maybe his fitness and his off the ball efforts that don't get as noticed. I think Paul is actually one of the hardest working players in Super League away from actually carrying the ball, and I think that's what makes him a player he is today. And I think it's finding that route to get there, and he's obviously done it.
Paul, I just want to go back to that time in 2013, and you mentioned that move to Wakefield after you were released at Leeds, which was you know, a pretty difficult time for you. And then you almost lost your full-time contract at Wakefield, and you were thinking at the time, look, I'm going to have to go and work on my dad's scrap business. I mean, how close were you to giving up rugby at that stage?
It was pretty scary. I remember going to, I think it was James Webster at the time. I think I had... halfway through that season, I went in and says, oh, what are your plans? Because I was, I think, willing to stay and just keep playing. I knew I wasn't playing great. I just wanted a bit of security. And James Webster says, oh, we've got yourself and Peter Godden here. We don't know what we're going to do regarding Hookers, who we're going to keep. And I think from that meeting, that's when it really hit home, that the panic set in and stuff like that. But I've always had good support around me. There's my manager. I know managers get stick off fans and stuff like that, but my manager's really supported me from 17 years of age. He's always backed me and told me just to back me, saying I've probably been a little bit too eager to jump in to get the security on stuff, whereas he's just always told me to back my ability and backed me all the way.
But were there ever those moments then that you felt like it was a downward spiral? You know, that's great that you had that sort of infrastructure around you and family and friends and girlfriend and, you know, at the time. But was there a time when you just needed it, you know, you needed more help than you were getting?
There were times when I was thinking, what am I going to do work-wise? 100%, especially when I was...
What were your options?
Give us some good idea. My old man he'll just go straight to the pub and straight out and do something. So I'd just probably thought, saying that I wouldn't, because he used to take me when I was younger, but I'd get scared and stay in work van while my sister went out and did stuff with him. So I really don't
scared
know
of what
I'd have done.
Scared just, of what, Paul?
Just going out. I'm a little shitty ass.
Scared of getting out the van.
Just, yeah, going around people and stuff like that, like proper little pooey ass.
Look, fast forwarding then to the end of Wakey, you know, you left the club for Cass and you joined midway through the 2015 season. I mean, when you look back at that moment, and I guess, look, Wilco, Flash have the same sort of moments in their career where you joined a particular club or there was a particular time in a season where something just clicked. You must look back on that move now and just think, wow, that's where it really kick-started things for me.
Yeah, well, I think it was a couple of weeks before I joined Cass. Yestin Addis were ringing me to go to Salford early. And I think there were two or three weeks where we kept knocking it back for two or three weeks. And then Cass came, and just from the phone call with Paulie, just listening to his plans and what he saw, like, I didn't realise how much he knew about me as a player. The detail that he went to from when I was 18 playing against his Featherstone side and what he saw in me and the improvements that he could make in me. It made it a no-brainer, really.
Just thinking, Walker, for you, what was it, you know, when you came to Saints, and I know at first you weren't made particularly wanted because it was like people telling you you're not good enough to do this, but same as Mark, you know, joining when you went to Salford after Saints, being welcomed and being wanted makes a huge difference, doesn't it, for you guys?
It does, but like, you have to earn people's respect. Like, people don't just give you respect. You have to earn it. And going back to something that I think's transformed Paul's game is something I acknowledged when I was a younger athlete, was just be as fit as you can be. Like, be aerobically fit, or just try and be as fit as you can be, because it's just one of those things that it sort of never really does you wrong. So I walked into the St. Helens dressing room, there was Paul Newlove, Chris Joint, there was Paul Sculthorpe, Kieran Cunningham, Sean Long, Paul Wellens. And I was playing for East Hull maybe 18 months before that. So I was intimidated beyond belief. But I didn't feel welcomed well. I felt like a real pressure to change what I was doing and be better. And that's, right, constantly having a goal that's just slightly out of reach is one of the biggest keys to I think, improving as an individual. And when everything was going well, signed for St. Helens, and then you want to get in the team, right? You get in the team and then you want to win trophies. You want to win trophies, then you want to win, you know, the treble. These constant things being just out of reach were always the thing that drove me. So I think a good environment you can walk into, for sure. Great coaching helps. For sure. I think if you, as a player, I think if you go to a club and the coach and you click, he gets you, he uses you in the right way, that can just go nuclear, can't it? And that's from what an outside eye see, Paul, maybe yours and Daryl's relationship and how that's helped you out as a player.
Yeah, massively. Like I said, the first phone call, he picked up on things from when I played, he mentioned things when I played his Featherstone side when I was 18, and just that he had that much intel about me showed that he'd really took note on my game. And from the first week there, everything, like you say about the year environment, the standards that Paulie set in the group and the group set were massive. I can remember my first week, I'd go in at 7:30, but there were people like Andy Lynch in gym at 6:30 pushing his head to be fitter. And I was seeing all these senior blokes there wanting to get better, not just for themselves, but just for the team as well. And it wasn't an invite. You didn't get told you had to be there either. You do that off your own back to try and get better. And that's something that really stuck with me from joining Cass, and something that I still do now.
I think the best coaches in whatever sport in the world make the player feel special, and Paul alluded to it there. And I think we're seeing football with Fergie, all his players said that he made them feel special, and Klopp's the same. And I think that's really, really intelligent from Daryl. Firstly, it's probably to know his rugby, which we all know he does. He's a great coach, but then go into the detail of a player that he wants to sign, and then he probably has that intelligence and all his players around him, and then just giving them that love probably just breeds that work ethic that they've got at the club. And you can see it on the performances week in, week out. They're never beaten by hard work. It might be a better team or a better player, but you know the hard work is always there for Cass, and it's there for all to see.
With Pauly, at end of 2017, I thought I'd reached my peak at end of 2017. We'd won everything, and I thought, this is me now. I aren't going to kick on anymore. But after that season, Pauly sits me down in pre-season and goes, mate, you've still got another 20% in you here. And just to hear that from my coach, that he's got that belief in me, it makes you want to do it. It makes you believe that you can, and you do hope to get there.
On Daryl Powell, and you touched on him there, but he's been so instrumental for you. And I know it's a cliche in sport, isn't it? This kind of a coach telling you never to give up. But it feels like a real sort of Coach Carter moment for you when you met him.
Yeah, mate, it was great. Just from the first call, and we've had some disagreements at time in trainings and in games, but the respect's there. Like he's brought me on loads as a player, and whatever he asks of me, I'll do for him, really.
How does he make you tick, Paul? How does he get into your head? Because obviously it clicks sometimes with coaches, and some it just may not completely. I'm sure Wilco and Flash have got probably 10, 15 coaches that they were desperate to see the back of.
We're both rugby nerds. We could talk rugby all day. Even if we don't agree on it, we could just talk about different things, different teams. Like, we just, I don't know, there's just probably the love for rugby, really.
I'm interested to know, like, his relationship with other players, like, both on and off the field, because we've seen him get the best out in you. The likes of Luke Gale was at Bradford and Doncaster before he brought, and London before he brought him over to Cass. Zach Hardacre probably had his best period of his career. There's numerous players that have gone on to win personal accolades, and he's really developed them as players. Now, how does he do that?
I don't know, mate. It's mad, because if you look at the people that Pauly normally brings in, it's people that have probably gone from a relegated side or deemed not good enough to be in a top side. And Pauly somehow knows their potential even when they're at them clubs. And he knows that he just backs his centre to make people better, I think.
Yeah, and I think there's something about that hunger you get from defeat, innit? You know, it's like if you lose a big game at the end of the year and you're out, like I think that gives you an intensity going into a pre-season. If you're a player who's been relegated or had adversity, then you have this increased amount of energy and enthusiasm to go and attack something else. So I think that's just smart recruitment. You see the potential in someone who's faced a bit of adversity. You can utilise his skills. So you take him, give him some confidence, make him work hard. Hey, presto, that's coaching. And he's great at it. You know what I mean? He's consistently got the best out of individuals. And he's certainly, I think, a coach who'll, you know, we've seen him now. He's obviously leaving and going to Warrington. But I'm sure, you know, that he'll take those traits over to Warrington as well.
And there's a very fine line I've noticed in my career between managers and coaches. And there's some coaches out there that manage teams and they'll work on the direction everyone's got to go in. But there's some, and Nathan Brown was great at this when he coached us at Saints, where he'd see you as a player and break down a game or a training session and see the little idiosyncrasies in your game and improve them. And it's that constant, you know, detail and feedback that really good coaches get. And I think probably great coaching is lost a little bit in the game these days, because there's so many other things that result in a great performance, strength and conditioning and all that sort of stuff. But I think there should be more great coaching going on rather than just men who manage a team, because I don't think you get the same results and the same improvement in players like Daryl's had in a lot of the Cass lads.
Paul, you've had some great memories at Cass. I mean, look, the 2017 Grand Final, I think you pulled Wilco's pants down in the playoffs for that one. I remember Gailey's drop goal. And then, you know, I know Leeds beat you in the final there, but going up to that winning Man of Steel in 2020, how did that season come together for you? And could you see yourself getting that big prize? Was that on your mind at all 3 or 4 months out?
No, never. I think my success is based on the team. I've got a pretty important role in the Cass team now, being at nine, and I rate myself on how well we do as a team. So the start of the year we were flying, and after lockdown we just couldn't seem to get a win, and I take a bit of brunt of that because of my role in the team. I think it showed how emotional I want to end. When I did get the Man of Steel, I thought I was turning up just to say, well done, you've been nominated, and I was ready to go. And then they pulled the trophy out, and it was just mad.
I mean, it was a crazy year in that sense, because you've been given the fucking trophy on Zoom by Brian as well. It was the most unconventional way to get it. What was that like that night?
That's why I thought I was just going to do some questions and talk about the winner. Like, just give him, just say how good the winner were going to be, and then they just pulled it out. It was mad.
Do you have like a shirt and tie and then just like your boxer shorts underneath, or do you do?
They had to get a waistcoat off a bloke who was walking past because of how bad I looked.
You did have the serious moment though, because obviously, you know, you met up with Ellery Hanley and he talked to you. I know you've got so much respect for him, but he sort of talked you through why he'd convinced the panel that you were the man as well. I remember that moment. That was a big moment for you.
Yeah, massive. Just when I first got there, he walked into the room, and for some reason I couldn't speak to him. I like just like a little school kid, just shaking his hand and just listening to, like, same again, the detail that he went into about my game, like the panel really, like what the panel went through in picking the process, and like sometimes I don't know, it's not really, it's your try scorers and stuff like that that get all the headlights and stuff like that, but I can't even say it. Ellery, how much detail he went into about my game and my role, he really hit the nail on the head with it.
Mm. And look, the emotions that you showed that night when you got the award, and I remember watching it, and you were, you know, you broke down into tears, and people from Leeds aren't allowed to cry. You're not allowed to cry, strong Yorkshire men. You know... I mean, which is a ridiculous thing to say, but it's true. You're not allowed to show any emotion. Why were you so emotional that night? I know it's a silly question, but who were you thinking about? Come on, be open with us, Paul. Tell us what was going through your mind at that time.
Just my missus and my kids and my family, especially, like we touched on, like what happened leaving Leeds, my boyhood club, and not really knowing if I was going to make it as a rugby player anymore. And just thinking of all that. Well, I was watching the clip of me on the laptop, and then yeah, it's probably my missus has been with me since we were 15, and she was a big reason why, like, she really calmed me down as a kid. I was a bit of an hyper kid that was just bouncing here, there and everywhere, and she got hold of me and calmed me down.
Did Darryl Powell, you know, you said about, you know, 2017 standout season for you, you thought, I've arrived, this is me, I'm done. What has Darryl addressed you winning Man of Steel and your performances for this season, what he expected? You know, I'm saying, when you get to this sort of elevated peak of performance, has Darryl pushed you again? Or have you actually arrived now? Is that where we're at?
No, well, 2 days before the awards, he rang me going, oh, mate, I'm gutted that you haven't got it. I really thought you were in with a chance. So that's another reason why I'm emotional when I rocked up to do, because I think he's seen the scores and I was in second place with four rounds left. And no, but as soon as he rang me after, congratulated me, and he says, right, this is time. We're going for England now. We're getting you in that England setup. You're going to play in a World Cup. And that was it straight away. He focused on the next stage.
I mean, when you look at your stats, Paul, from that season, that Man of Steel season, over 1,000 metres covered from scoots at dummy half, an average gain of carry of 9.5 metres, 604 tackles, 92% success rate. I mean, It's like you've cheated on a video game, really, isn't it? 108 marker tackles, 17 of your 50 kicks retained by Cass, 8 assists as well. Wilco, great that, when, stats, when you go...
And
we, thank you. We rewind, Wilco, to the boy who got turfed out by Leeds. And it is a Hollywood story in that sense. It's the Jamie Vardy story. It's the Jamie Vardy comparison, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is because, you know, like I said about Paul, I don't think he had the ability to do what he's doing now when he was younger. That's sort of just the inevitable part of becoming a more, I think, a more mature athlete. You know, Paul now is probably, well, he's the rugby league hooker with the highest IQ, rugby IQ, you know, with a handful of people in the NRL who are up there maybe alongside him. He's one of the highest rugby IQ nines there is out there. And that comes just through just playing a lot of games and executing lots of skills. The stats you spoke about there, Will, is like Paul would be a tick in every column after a game. You know, he'd do a kick down a short side. He'd do a try assist when he does the little turn up to his back rower all the time down the short side, but seems to catch every team out every week. And then he'll be support player. You know, the support player that we saw for the last minute try, you know, that if you track his movements around the field, he has no right to be sometimes where he is. But I'll just give you something. I was sat next to Sean Wayne at the Challenge Cup coverage, and just really interesting to get his mindset on what he's looking for. You know, if Paul's, you know, aiming to play for England, and he's obviously a huge chance of that happening. You know, all those stats, what you list, Will, number of tackles, number of, you know, marker tackles, kicks and all that, you know, Sean Wayne's not really looking at many of those things. He's just looking at repeated high intensity efforts. And that's, I think, just following up a sprint or three quarters paced effort with another one and another one and another one. And I'll tell you this, Paul McShane's at the top of the league for those every week. So forget all the try assists. Forget all the other bits, you know, like that we like to talk about. You know, he's these players down the short side where he's sucking defenders in. It's the fact he's mobile around the field and puts more high-intensity meters in than probably most people in Super League. And that's why he's a great chance of playing for England at the end of the year. Not that I'm building your hopes up, because, you know, Sean Wayne's not giving me the nod. You know what I mean? He's not said, by the way, Mac, he's definitely in. He didn't, but he's certainly making some nice noises.
You've got a massive chance to do that. And look, you've been called up to the squad. Obviously, the coronavirus kind of obliterated the international year, didn't it? But that potential to play in the World Cup in October, because that's something you completely had written off before. I know you look 41 now, Paul, with your new haircut, but you're only 31. You're a baby.
Yeah. It was something that I written off. I think it was probably, might have been end of 2017 or 2018. I think end of 2017, I were in the squad for the World Cup and ended up missing out. And I just thought, like I said at the time, I thought that was the chance for me. And I think I've got to credit Paulie again for always pushing me to want to get in there. Like, that were always his plans for me every year. You should have a goal of getting in that squad. Even when I was going, oh, I don't know if it's me though, Paulie, he'd say, no, it is you. You have to keep working hard to get in there.
Mm. Look, from Wilco Flash can sort of back me up on this one, but for the very little I know about Sean Wayne, and we've had him a couple of times on the podcast, you and him seem like the perfect fit. I mean, I can imagine him loving your story, and I can imagine he's the kind of coach that's saying to you, look, get hungry and making you hungry and making you want to be there in October.
It makes you want to work. Like, during the lockdown, we were having little Zoom chats, and once we started back playing at Cass, as results weren't going our way, but the little chats with Wayne made you still want to be playing and giving your all to push your way into his plans.
I played under him for 3 years in the academy at Wigan, and he was our head coach. And probably the one word that I'd describe Sean Wayne as is intense. And in a rugby sense, he loves that from his players on the field. He loves strong ball carriers. He loves strong defenders. He loves players with lots of line speed who put pressure on the opposition ball players. And I think that last little bit is what typifies some of Macca's qualities off the ball and putting pressure on other players, whether that's a kicker or another ball player. He's really, really strong at that. And I think at international level, where time is of the essence for the opposition in terms of making players. That's such a big thing. And I think that's one thing that Macca probably brings to the party more than any other hooker, and that's that intensity around the ball.
How far away did Sean Wayne have to sit on Zoom to get that head in? Do you know what I mean? He's like sat in the back room just to get his head.
You would not say that if he was sat next to you, John.
He is sat here.
Is it?
No. It'd be weird if he was, wouldn't it? How weird would that be? If I was just sat in my house with Sean Wayne, just chilling.
But look, it is, I mean, Wilco, you can back this up. And I know I've just sort of mentioned that Hollywood side of it. And Paul can't see this because he's still in the career and he doesn't want to see it and doesn't want to buy into that hype because there's still so much to do. But, you know, if he was to get to the World Cup and to feature for England in a really strong England side, from where he's come from, there aren't many players who sort of stick at it and transform their career where it all comes good at the end like that, the perfect finale.
No, you're right. It's I think, well, you're right to say it's a remarkable story and something we probably just gloss over. And like I said, I think Paul's journey is a bit of a lesson for younger athletes about there's different routes to success, you know. But I'll say this, look, if Paul plays for England at the end of the year and they get beat by Australia in the semi-final, or Tonga or Samoa, is it, or whoever they play in the semi-final, then that's the carrot again to go again, isn't it? Do you know, it doesn't stop rugby. You know, the most disappointing thing I think in my career was in 2006, we won the Challenge Cup, the Grand Final, league leaders, and then we went to Australia and beat Australia. And do you know, after we beat Australia, I was 21, 22 years old, I had the most anticlimactic feeling of my entire life because I was like, these are all these things that I dreamt of doing. And I just, you know, like, and I was like, it absolutely floored me because I was like, I don't really know where to go from here, you know? And for Paul, you know, these incremental new challenges are just how you do it, innit? You play for your country, you want to play a lot for your country, or you want to captain your country, or you want to beat Australia, you want to win a, you know, we can never be satisfied in life of where we are. We've got to have an appetite to go somewhere else. And that's the challenge. For people like yourself, Will, you know, in the media and broadcasting, that's how you've, you know, become good at what you do, is that appetite to just be better. And, you know, it's something that only maybe certain people have, and Paul's certainly got it. And there's loads of great examples of people who've got that just willingness to keep pushing for the next challenge. So I'm sure if he makes the England squad, Paolo will be into him about winning an international tournament next. You know, he won't let him get away with that.
Mm. So Paul, what for you then are the big sort of motivational factors left? I mean, you've achieved so much, but on that bucket list, bearing in mind the sky is probably the limit from where you're coming from now, what really would you like to tick off before you hang up your boots in 5-6 years' time?
Well, like I said earlier, I base myself on my team's success, and I've never won a Challenge Cup, I've never won a Grand Final. So they're two biggies for me to get after. Obviously, there's winning the World Cup this year and stuff like that. So there's big things that I need to do for me to be satisfied with my career.
How did Cass win a trophy, Paul? How do you get from where you are now to win a trophy?
It's a tough one, because at Cass, like I said earlier, we're not a team of these big names and stuff like that. We're a tight collective group, and we're a group that gives it all for each other. And I think this year we've got a bit of that. We've got us reasons to be even tighter as a group and push to finish, because we've got some big personalities in our team that are finishing their careers or moving on. And we've got a reason this year, if no better reason for me, why we are giving our all to get somewhere at the end of this year. So there's always motivation in around your team, but for me, it's whoever coaches, whichever players come in, they buy into our culture and get into how tight we are as a group, then no matter who you come up against, if you've got each other's back, you'll win somewhere.
And how's the news been since, how's the reception of the news of Daryl leaving at the end of the season? How have the lads taken to it and the club as a whole?
I think, obviously, everyone's really gutted, but happy as well. Like, I think both the club and Paolo are pretty lucky. They've had this relationship for so long, 8 years it is. Paoli's done what he's done and made the club into a top half, top four team, challenging team. And for him to be able to move on his own terms, where there's no bad blood, he's not being sacked and stuff like that, it's all on good terms. So I think in that respect, it's really good. And from Cass as a club, then willing to let Paoli go to bring someone in to freshen, like not realising they want to freshen things up and go on to the next stage again. I don't think it's a move that we're doing to go backwards. It's a move to try and keep progressing with people with fresh ideas.
Mm. And I guess that's so important, Paul, isn't it? Too, because you know he's been there so long, Darryl Powell, and he's instilled a unique culture at that club. And you know, you will want to keep so many of those identities, even though a new coach comes in and tries to put his own stamp on things.
Yeah, and that's where the senior boys and the leadership group that'll still be here next year and the years after keep that and add what the new coach wants in there as well and keep pushing the standards that have been left by the people before us.
And do you see yourself playing the rest of your career at Cass? I don't know how long you signed for, but if there was, you know, the opportunity to maybe go and play in the NRL, would that be something that you'd like to do?
I don't know if I'm past that. I'll be 32 at the end of this year, so I don't know if something like that would arise, but I'm more than happy at Cass, yeah. Just for what the club have done for me and how they took me in and the club as a whole, not just Paoli, but the players, the staff that made me a better player and a better person. If I were to finish there, I'd be more than happy to do that.
So he says, Wilco, before the money men come in. I mean, there's still an bullshit, NRL deal
bullshit,
in there somewhere.
I'm calling bullshit on it.
I've still got 18 months left as speaking. Well.
Mate, he's got West Tigers speedos on there. If he stands up now, he's got West Tigers trunks on. I'm telling you now. Paul, show us. Oh, yeah. Good legs. If they are, they could be.
he's off with Jackson at the end of the season.
Oh yeah, right. Well, Paul's manager's probably pulling his hair out there. He's like, he's in the market doing a bit of dealing. Paul's just said, "No, I'll finish it, Cass. I love it."
No, if it rose, it'd be definitely something that I'd be willing to do 100%.
Look, John mentioned pulling hair out. We've got to address the new haircut, Paul. When did you decide to turn into an upside-down man?
After Ads Milner's testimonial against Hull KR, I had people sending me pictures. I think it was Robbie Holmes, who's got bad hair as it is. I don't know how he's got the cheek, but I just looked at it and seen 2017 Gailey and whipped it off.
Rugby league dressing rooms are ruthless for hair loss. Every day I would...
Are they, Mark? Are they, Mark?
Yeah, and we would compare each slightly receding hairline or each slight, very slightly in my case, balding crown, and it would be pretty ruthless. And there's quite a few little transplants going on these days. I think Gailey might have set the tone, and I know a few lads who've done it on the QT. But
we had two sneaky ones last year.
Danny Richardson. Yeah, he wore a scrum cap for like 9 weeks just out the blue or something, and you're like, oh, what's going on here? Then all of a sudden he's just Quiff Richards. You know what I mean?
Next thing, Eden bumped one in as well.
That's good.
I remember when that...
Greg Eden bumped one in. He bumped one in a couple... Honestly, they weren't even out there that he had to fill in. But we got Griff to shave these. We're guilty of to shave these off, yeah.
George Griffin used to take the piss out of me all the time, and he's worse than me now.
Yeah,
there's a problem.
He's gone.
There's a problem. Like men are, there's a lot of men going to Turkey and getting fake teeth. There's a lot of cosmetic stuff. Will, I'm looking at you. There's a lot of cosmetic shit going on. Right. Mac is a real man. Look, he's bald and he's got a beard. Mark, you've had hair something or other. We don't know what it is. Well, it goes out your own teeth. There's not a chance there, your own teeth. There's only me and Mac are here, aren't they, who are like legit.
You've got a body like a candle, though, Wilkin.
Yeah.
So have I.
I said as soon as it all starts going, I said I'd be the first one. I'd commission I'll charter the plane and get us all over there. But look, Paul, I am fascinated by Gailey's hair, as he well knows, because whenever I see him, that's the first thing I address. But it kind of, I mean, he looked like the Archbishop of Canterbury, so it is an improvement. But when you look at it now, and I know you don't see him as much, now he's gone off to Leeds, it was almost like he'd kind of shaved some pubes off, got a bit of Pritt stick and stuck it on the front. And then every year he just Pritt sticked a few more pubes on. But I mean, overall, do you think it's worked out for him, that transplant?
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, it's made him look 10 years younger, and it takes attention away from that mole that's just in between his eyebrows. You probably don't recognise it now.
I've seen that. But is he the burniest man in rugby league?
I thought you were going to say his nose.
No. What's wrong with his nose? You can't say that.
No, it's just... I can. It's large, pointy-ish. He can take it.
What did you say, Mark? Is he the vainest man in rugby league?
I was just a question. I didn't know. I wasn't on side. I just thought Macca might be able to shed light on it.
He always wants to look the part. He's always for one training with shirt off in gym. He's got his little pause. What he does, he's got his own technique for a photo. I don't even know how he does it.
With his arm on the side.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. It makes his shoulders look right big.
Yeah.
But
it's small man syndrome, isn't it? We've seen it before. Look, really good to have you on, Paul. And I mean, it is such a brilliant story. Like I say, you can't really see it, and it's difficult to reminisce when you're right in the thick of it. But it's an incredible turnaround, and it's not over yet. Like you say, you're 31 and there's still so much to go. And you want to top it off with a grand final and a Challenge Cup and an amazing summer, well, an amazing end of the year with England as well, starting in October. But really appreciate you coming on, Paul, and all the best, mate.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck for the rest of the season.
Cheers, Macca.
Cheers, fellas. Thank you.
Cheers, Paul. Cheers.
There we go. That is Paul McShane. Thank you so much for listening to Out of Your League. We'll have a new episode for you every week available to download from wherever you get your podcasts. And you can watch us on YouTube if you want. Don't forget as well to give us a little follow on @OutOfYourRL on Twitter. We'll be seeing you next time.